years he used to commute by train, and later he used to commute by plane. He mentioned that he always used to say Tfilas HaDerech when he traveled back and forth, until after many years of commuting by plane, he got so used to it and he didn't feel nervous at all, so he said he stopped saying Tfilas HaDerech. He held, not everybody agreed with this, his opinion was that the Tfilas HaDerech is a tfilah that a person recites Kol HaDrochem B'Cheskas HaKonah. When you're traveling on a highway, so the Talmud tells us that all the highways are slightly dangerous, and Tfilah Be'ez Tzara, the Ramban holds that Tfilah is only Midirabbanan, the obligation to daven is only Midirabbanan every day, but Tfilah Be'ez Tzara, when a person is in Sakona, then it's an obligation to daven Min HaTorah. So he felt that the Tfilah Saderech is considered a Tfilah Be'ez Tzara. But he said it's not a 50-50 suffix. Sakona is way less, and it was so slight, the suffix Sakona so slight, he didn't even perceive it as a Sakona. So the Poskim say, if you don't even perceive that there's a suffix Sakona, then it's not called the suffix Sakona. That's what the Gemara calls Shomer Psoim Hashem. When there's less than 50-50 suffix Sakona, and the person is absolutely not nervous whatsoever. So he stopped saying Tfilas HaDerech at one point. He used to come to the yeshiva every Tuesday morning, unless it was Yontif in the middle of the week. So he would come to give Shia Chalamayit. It wasn't our idea. It was his idea. He gave Shia Chalamayit Pesach, Chalamayit Sukkos. He didn't take any breaks. He would come to the yeshiva Tuesday morning. He would give a shiur. This was his weekly routine. He would give a two-hour shiur for the smicha students and two-hour shiur for the college students. Then on Tuesday night, he would give a shiur for the balabatim. There was a shul in the middle of Manhattan. It was called Beis HaKnesses Moriah. And he gave a shiur in Gemara. He gave a shiur in Brochus for many, many years. I think 11, 12 years or something, until he made a siyum on Gemara Brochus. So he would give a shiur on Tuesday night for the balabatim. They were balabatim who had come from Europe for business to New York. Balabatim came from out of town. They would always arrange it in such a way they should be in New York on Tuesday night. They shouldn't miss the shiur. Then Wednesday morning, he would be back in the yeshiva. He would give 2 hours shiur for the smicha students, 2 hours shiur for the college students. He would go back to Boston. He only gave, let's say, if a student would be in the shiur, he would only hear 4 hours of shiur, as opposed to the other Rebbe. The other Rebbe gave shiur Sunday through Thursday. But I remember when I first entered Rav Soloveitchik's shiur, so all the Rebbe started giving shiur 1 week, and they hung up a sign, Rabbi Soloveitchik will not start giving shiur until the third week of the term, and he asks all his students to prepare till Daf Hei in Sanhedrin. So I thought, what an arrogant man. What's the matter with him? Everybody else starts shiur now, and he has to wait till the third week. So it came the third week, and he gave 2 shiurim on the third week. He was already ahead of everybody else. So all the Rebbe's in yeshiva started from Daf Beis, and they were going slowly, slowly, slowly. And he gave 2 shiurim, 2 hours each, 4 hours of shiur. He was ready. He used to speak very quickly. He didn't repeat himself so much in his public talks. When he gave a public drasha, that was a different story. He would explain everything very well. In yeshiva, he would explain it once, and he would go weiter. And he used to speak a lot. He'd speak quickly, cover a lot of ground. Then every year on his father's yahrzeit, on Gimel Shvat, his mother lived on many years after the father, 40, 50 years longer than the father. But every year on Gimel Shvat, he would give a big yahrzeit drasha in memory of the father. He would always pick a topic that people should understand. Hundreds of people would come to participate. He would either speak about Kiddush, Havdalah, benching, davening, tzitzis, tefillin, yalla v'yavai, talamata. He would always speak about a topic that people would understand. One year he got up and he said, he's giving a sheer memory of his father, so it's not right that he's giving all the years. He's giving out tzitzis and tefillin and everything. These are things that he didn't really learn with his father. He learned with his father a lot of other things. This year he's going to say, oh, it's something that he heard from his father. So he gave a knockout sheer on shtaris. Eidi chasim akaris, eidi mesir akaris, oisei sniknis b'ksiva mesir. Real complicated gemara. Half of the balabatim did not understand what he said. So the next year he said, last year was an experiment. And he's going back to the purpose of his year is that people should understand. We were just discussing we just had a siyum now. We were discussing over the siyum. Rav Soloveitchik in the early years used to give the shiur in Yiddish. And then one day there was a boy who was a Sfardi, who was attending the shiur. He didn't understand one word of Yiddish. So after the first shiur, he realized that he's going to have to go to a different class. He won't be able to stay in Rav Soloveitchik's shiur. So Rav Soloveitchik happened to come into the Beis Medrash in the afternoon, and he knew that boy. So he asked him, were you able to follow this morning shiur? So the boy said, no, I didn't understand one word. He davened in the Spanish-Portuguese shul. He didn't know one word of Yiddish. So Rav Soloveitchik said, try it out, come back tomorrow. Try it out another day. Maybe it'll get better. The next day, the shiur was in English, and that was it. From that time on, the shiur was in English. The purpose of the shiur is that people should understand. He's going to give a shiur. They won't understand. Toiknesh. The purpose of the Yahrzeit shiur was that hundreds of balabatim should come. They should understand what he's saying. One of the rabbonim who learned by Rav Soloveitchik in the late 1930s, Rav Soloveitchik, when his father was still alive, his father gave shiurim in Yeshiva University in New York. So Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik lived in Boston. So Dr. Rebel, who was then the Rosh Yeshiva, the president of Yeshiva University, Yeshiva College, at that time there was no Yeshiva University, so he sponsored a kollel in Boston, had about 15, 20 single people, European Talmidim, learning by Rav Soloveitchik. So one of the older Rabbanim, much older than he told us, that when he heard that Rav Soloveitchik was a big Ilui, and that he was going to start giving shiur, so he was wondering, what is the definition of an Ilui? He didn't know, Rabbanat Greenblatt, from Memphis, Tennessee. So he said he was wondering, what is that all about? So he was fascinated to find out what it is. So he traveled to Boston, and it was Chodesh Elul, before Rosh Hashanah. So he said, Rav Soloveitchik is going to give a shiur on Hilchas Shofar, Tkiyas Shofar, as a preparation for Rosh Hashanah. So he says he came. Rav Soloveitchik gave a shiur for 6 hours, no break. And he started reading the Rambam line by line, and he showed that everything made sense. Everything made sense in the Rambam. So he said, now I know what an Ilui is. He gives a shiur for 6 hours, and everybody understands everything, that nothing is difficult at the end. That was all of the shiurim that he gave. He explained everything so well, everybody should understand everything. He used to give a shiur every Motzoi Shabbos in Boston for the Balabatim, and it was mainly attended by university students. So he wanted to cater to them, to speak on their level. So he always used to give a drosha on Parshas HaShavua for many years. He gave Aruch Chaim, other years. Then in the last many years, it was a shiur on Parshas HaShavua that was always on Hashkofe, that was going to show them how they should lead their lives. I used to switch the topics. The last few years, it was on Parshas HaShavua. So at one point, he told one of the Balabatim they should announce that he's going to start giving shiurim on Tehillim, on Matzoi Shabbos. So this Balabos, Atamim Zdika Balabos, Hashem HaShabbos, he was not a learned person. So he said, by Rabbi Soloveitchik, Tehillim is so easy. What are you going to say already? So he said, don't worry, Mr. Millen, I'll make it hard. He didn't make it hard. He took the most complicated things and he made everything easy. That was what his greatness was, he made everything easy. Every year he used to give a special drasha, Aseres HaMei Tshuva, for the Rabbinical Council of America, for the status Rabbanim. But it was always advertised in the newspaper, so it was open to the public. So hundreds of people came who were not members of the rabbinical council. Balabatim came. Every year he used to give a shiur before Pesach for the rabbinic alumni. So one year he would go through Mechiras Chametz for an hour and a half or 2 hours. One year he would talk about Taruvas Chametz. One year he would talk about the Seder, about Matzah, about Mor, about everything. Every year, whenever there would be an opportunity, he would always give a shiur for the students. Whatever Masechta that we were learning, before Rosh Hashanah, he would spend time to learn Rosh Hashanah. Before Yom Kippur, he would spend a few shurim on Yom Kippur. Avodas Yom Kippurim, the Malachas, before Sukkot, Chalamayt Sukkot, he gave shiur on the Masechta. Before Sukkot, he would talk about Hilchas Sukkot. Chalamayt Sukkot, he gave shiur on the Masechta. Before Chanukah, before Purim, before Yontif, he would always give special, in addition to the regular shiur. He gave an awful lot of shiurim. He would always speak at the Mizrahi conventions. Those were major addresses. I remember when we, as students, as children, they would ask the Rav at the end of the shiur that morning, the drasha with the Mizrahi convention would be on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night. It was always when he was in New York. So the students would ask him, should we go tonight to hear the drasha? He would say, come, it's going to be something good. It's going to be something good. He used to prepare major addresses, always. For the Mizrahi, whenever a big Talmud Chacham would pass away, he would deliver a hesped. He wouldn't just deliver. There were other rabbanim would deliver heads, but they would take Parshas HaShavua and start crying and go through every pasuk, how the pasuk applies to this tzaddik. Or they would say standard hespedim that could apply to any tzaddik or any talmid chacham. Rav Soloveitchik wouldn't give that type of a hesped. He would give a hesped. He would say something that was unique and special to this person, bring out some midah, and encourage everyone that they should follow that midah. Some either or another. He has quite a few of hespedim published. He has the hesped for his uncle Rav Elvala. He has the hesped for Rav Zev Gold. He has the hesped for the Talna Rebbe, Talna Rebbetzin. Every hesped was a whole work and a whole mahalach and a whole binyan with mekoris from Gemoris and from Midrashim. He had, one might say, an obsession to give over everything that he had. He had learned so much by his father. Most of his learning he did by his father, and then less than 50% of his learning he did on his own. When he would give the shiur in Yiddish, He would say over verbatim the Lashon that he heard from his father. When he switched over into English, he couldn't say over, his father spoke in Yiddish. So he would try to translate the expressions into English. But most of the time when he gave the shiurim in Yiddish, he would say verbatim, word for word, as his father had said. He was a very dramatic speaker. On one occasion, I think I was present when this occurred, when Rav Soloveitchik delivered the Yahrzeit Drosha. So what, he was very dramatic. So one of the Balabatim came over to him and he said to him in English, the Drosha was in Yiddish. The Yahrzeit Drosha was 4 hours at night, the night of the Yahrzeit. So the first 2 hours were halacha and the second 2 hours were drush. The halacha was halacha and the drush was drush. Some Rabbanim, they're so into drush, so when they give a shiur in halacha, everything is favasit. The halacha is not really halacha, it's half drush. Other Rabbanim are so into halacha, they can't give drush. The drush is not poetic. Like I was asked by the rabbi to speak here, so I said advar halacha. I didn't say advar Torah. I said ashir. I said ashir. So there's some people, they're so into halacha, they don't know how to say poetic drush. Some people are so much into drush, they're halacha shvach. But Rav Soloveitchik, the drush was poetic. It was hashkafa, poetry. And the halacha was halacha. He wouldn't mix the two together. Halacha is a separate discipline that has to be self-contained. Just like you don't mix in terms from physics into biology. You don't mix in terms from biology into physics. So you don't mix anything else into learning. Torah is a self-contained discipline. And all the ideas have to come in A-E-B-E. You don't give a philosophical concept or a svara hin, a svara her, some logical explanation. He had a famous drasha where he would speak about the revolution of Korach, the common sense revolution of Korach. That Korach was fighting with Moshe Rabbeinu. He said the psokim of Moshe Rabbeinu don't make sense. Moshe Rabbeinu tells us if you have an empty house, you have to put one mezuzah on the front, otherwise you're not supposed to live there. And if you have a house full of svarim, you still have to put a mezuzah. But the house is full of svarim, common sense dictates that you don't need a nocha mezuzah. It's full of svarim. If you have the garment that's white, so you put in a little bit of tchelis, one or two strings of tchelis, and you're to the midst of the whole garment is tchelis. So what do you need tchelis in the corner? So he said, Korach was telling that common sense dictates that these psokim that Moshe Rabbeinu is giving don't make any sense. But halacha is halacha. You can't ask akasha in medicine. I'm going to ask the doctor akasha. Based on common sense, it doesn't make sense what he's telling me to do. Or in physics or in chemistry. This chemical is blue and that chemical is blue. When you mix them together, they explode and they turn yellow. Frag akasha. Chemistry is chemistry. It has its own. You can't ask akasha. Why did it explode? This doesn't explode. That doesn't explode. Why does it explode if you mix them together? Why does the color change? Every discipline has its own rules and regulations. You can't ask akashas from common sense. And it's halacha also. There's nothing that says the halacha may not make sense. Halacha makes sense is wonderful, but there's no halacha. There's nothing that says it has to make sense. Chemistry doesn't have to make sense, and physics doesn't have to make sense. Those are the rules. So the rules of halacha do not necessarily have to make sense. His shiurim and halacha were always self-contained. When he gave a drasha in philosophy, that was philosophy. He never used the philosophy in explaining halacha. The 10 years that I attended his shiur in the yeshiva, he mentioned once Aristotle, because we were learning on Ran and Sanhedrin, so and the Ran has two opinions about the nature of the pull of gravity. So he says, Sophic and Aristotle. That was the one time that he mentioned Aristotle in Minnesota. Because the Ran had two opinions, whether gravity means that things are heavy so they fall to the ground, or there's a force of gravity that is pulling it to the ground. So he said the two opinions are found in Aristotle, and the Ran has an Afkemina Lahaloch and Hilchus Retzer. He never mixed in. The Drush was Drush and the Halacha was Halacha. There was a great Tana, Rab Lezer ben Hurkin, is known as Rab Lezer HaGadol. The Talmud Yerushalmi says the reason why he's known as Rab Lezer HaGadol because he was very, very humble. Rab Lezer HaGadol was very humble. That's how it says in Talmud Yerushalmi. So the Gemara in Sukkah gives a description of this Tana Rab Lezer HaGadol. He, when people would ask him a shaila, if he heard it from his Rebbe, he would say it over. If he didn't hear from his Rebbe, he wouldn't give them an answer. So he asked him a shaila, and he started talking about, he diverted their attention, started talking about something else. And then he said he knows the answer, but since he didn't hear from his Rebbe, he's not going to say it. This was one of his midah, shaloyam adova shaloshama mipi rabba. He only said things that he heard from his Rebbe. Then there's a passage in the Pirkei de Rab Lezer, which quotes all of it, Medrash, which quotes a lot of Mamorim from Rab Lezer. So the Pirkei de Rab Lezer makes a statement, when Rab Lezer said a shir in halacha, he said such chidushim, original insight, shalosh amosin, oizem mi Sinai. From the days of Maimon HaSinai, No one had heard such original ideas. So the two are an outright contradiction. Here the Gemara says he had a policy, his midah was, he would only say, Masha Shama Mi Rabbi. I don't say over what he heard from his Rebbe. And there the Medrash describes him as giving chidushim, original insights, that no one had heard from the days of Maamin HaSinai. So there's a famous essay by Rav Kook, the former chief rabbi, Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook. So he writes about this. He says there's no contradiction. He says Rav Lezer only said over what he heard from his Rebbe. But he would say, I heard from my Rebbe X, Y, Z. And that's based on this premise, and that shows that premise. And he showed, from based on what he heard from his Rebbe, he pointed out chidushim that no one else had realized. They heard the same chidushim from the Rebbe, but they never put two and two together. They never understood it. That's where it was when we learned by Rav Soloveitchik. He would say over, he would say over Gemara. He would say over a pasuk and chumash. So he said, what do you see from this pasuk? And we said the din. He says, no, no, but what do you see? What's behind the din? So you see, the din and the chumash is based on two premises. Premise number one, premise number two. He opened up our eyes, just had to say Poshim Shat, a Gemara, a Mishnah, what's the din in the Mishnah? He would explain, just say over the din, no fancy, he didn't add anything. He just pointed out what the Mishnah is telling us. It was an eye-opener. Sometimes he would just recite a Pasuk. He would say, there's a Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, where he would pause. He would read the Pasuk and pause, and then just read it with the right inflection. We used to realize, that's Pshat in the Pasuk. He didn't say anything. He just paused in the right place. So we never realized that. That was the Pshat in the Pasuk. Some of the boys used to go to Pirchei Aguda. On Shabbos afternoon, they have groups where boys talk and learning, and they get together. So in one of the Pirchei Aguda groups in Williamsburg, so they had practice that every Shabbos by Shalosh Shuvos, someone else would say over at Dvar Torah from his Rebbe. So this one learned in Torah V'das, so he would say over from his Rebbe. This one learned to Chaim Berlin, he said from his Rebbe each month. So when this boy's turn, he learned by Rav Soloveitchik, he said it was so hard to say over something for Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik didn't say original Chidushim, he just said Poshe Pshat. So what are you going to say over? You have to tell him over the Gemara, and then Tosis asked the Kasha, and then the way Rav Soloveitchik explained the Teretz, it came out, you didn't say anything, you just gave Poshe Pshat in the Gemara. At the end of the Shir, we would kick ourselves. Why did we think that it wasn't? Why didn't we understand what was going on? He just gave Poshup Shat in the Gemara. That was the Poshup Shat all along. There was no Kash in the first place. That was the Yortzeit Shir that he gave. He used to give the Yortzeit Shir. He used to start off with Kashas. We thought, Moshe Rabbeinu can't answer these Kashas. He would word the Kashas in such a way you would think it's impossible that anybody can answer these Kashas. Then he would quote, and after presenting four or five kashas that were murderous kashas. So after present all the kashas, he would quote another Gemara somewhere else, and he said, what's the din, what do you see from that Gemara? He would just say over a din from the Gemara and explain what it's based on. Poshup Shat, no Chiddush. He said, you see from the Gemara such a yisoid, such an idea. So once he brought to our attention that Gemara, so he said, all the kashas fell apart by themselves. Everything fell apart. And we were ready to kick ourselves after every shir that he gave. Why didn't we realize that that was the Poshup Shat? So I started to mention that at the end of one of the Yortzeit drushes, one of the Balabatim walked over and he said, Rabbi Sol, he said in English, the Shir was always in Yiddish, he said in English, Rabbi Soloveitchik, did anybody ever tell you that you're a very good actor? He was a very good actor. So he said, without batting an eyelash, he said, drama is an integral part of communication. If you want to communicate to someone else, you have to drama. He never took any courses in drama. It came natural by him. If he's explaining something, so he would explain it. He explained it in a fashion that everyone should understand. Everyone understood when he gave Pshat. Now in America, I guess other parts of the world also, there's an attitude that people have to be politically correct. You're not allowed to say certain things because it's not the mekubal ala brias. Rabbi Soloveitchik felt that you're not allowed to be politically correct. He used to say that whatever is politics is kula sheker. So someone asked him, so how come we don't call it sheker? How come we call it politics? He says, even the name is sheker. If you would have called it sheker, at least the name would be emes. Even the name is sheker. Everything. So what's politically correct, he couldn't care less. So when he belonged to Mizrahi, at a time that it was an embarrassment to belong to Mizrahi. He said, he doesn't care. He says, people have tainus, he belongs to Mizrahi. He would take a stand. People would say he's crazy. He said, what can I do? That's my opinion. He would take a stand. He didn't care what anybody had to say. He had his opinions in halacha. He had his family traditions. That's the way he does things. He doesn't care what other people say, what other people do. What can he do? These are his traditions. He used to speak a lot about Yosef with the brothers. That Yosef was different from the brothers. His name was Yosef. His name was Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Joseph Soloveitchik. So he spoke about himself. This is one of the drushes that he gave from Mizrahi when he explained why he switched. He used to belong to Aguda. Why he switched over to Mizrahi? He says his family always belonged to Aguda. His grandfather, Reb Chaim, attended Aguda conventions and so on. But he says he felt he had to switch over to the Mizrahi. So he spoke about Yosef and the brothers. So he said Yosef had dreams about the future, that everything is going to be different. And the brothers said to him, "You're crazy, you're Meshug, everything is going to stay the same." He was interpreting the dreams that they're going to move to a different society and they're going to have to get used to a different style of living and so on. So Rav Soloveitchik said that he feels in a certain sense that he's like Yosef, that the brothers are angry at him, all the other Rabbanim are angry at him, they don't understand him. And he feels that he can't just go along to do what's politically correct, to say what everybody else wants him to say, what everybody else will be happy with. He felt compelled to say what he feels is correct. He used to compare himself to Yosef, and he has in one of his published essays, this was one of his favorite drushes, the Gemara speaks about one of the Chachamim, Rabbi Yochanan. So he had his own practices that the other Rabbanim were not happy about. One of his strange practices was that he was very good looking, Rabbi Yochanan, so he used to sit outside of the mikveh for the women, so that when the women come out of the mikveh, they should see this good looking man, so they should have children who'll also be good looking like Rabbi Yochanan. So the other Rabbanim said, "Meshuganet, what are you sitting outside of the mikveh? It's not Derech Eretz." He said, "That's what he feels, that's the right thing to do." So the Gemara says, "You're not afraid. All the Rabbanim say that you're doing wrong." So he says, "I'm like Yosef HaTzadik. You have to do what's right, even if everybody screams that you're doing wrong." So he used to do this all the time, Rav Soloveitchik. He didn't stay outside of the mikveh, but he had his own opinions on different things. It's well known that he was offered a position many years ago. He was offered a position to teach in Torah V'Das. So it didn't work out, and there were a few reasons why it didn't work out. One of the reasons was, this was published after he passed away, so in Hamor, they printed this. Hamor is a Torah publication, Satna, basically Satna, yeah. So in Hamor, they printed this about Rabbi Soloveitchik. I don't think they ever wrote anything about Rabbi Soloveitchik then. So they wrote, interesting, they heard that he was offered a position in Torah V'Das. There are a few reasons why it didn't work out. One of the reasons was because if he would be in Torah V'Das, he would have to follow the party line. Every yeshiva has its own policy. Whoever's the Rosh Yeshiva sets the tone and everybody has to follow. And YU is like a university. There's academic freedom. Everybody can say whatever they want. L'toivo olero. And everybody does whatever he wants. So Rabbi Soloveitchik felt he has to be in a place where he can maintain his family traditions. So he had his Nusach HaTfilin, had his Minhagim, had his Shittas, and so on. In his school in Maimonides, I remember, sometimes I would daven Erech HaLamoed in Boston, so all of the children wore tefillin, he wouldn't wear tefillin. He had it done. He said, "How can I wear tefillin? HaLamoed, his family tradition is that they don't wear tefillin on HaLamoed." So he said, "You can't tell me my own yeshiva, I have to follow the students, even though everybody wore tefillin." He said, "They're mechuyev to follow their family tradition. The students' family tradition is that they wear tefillin, so just because they're his students, they shouldn't switch over. All the psokim and all the minhagim, they follow their own. They shouldn't follow his," he said. But he says, "You can't tell me my own yeshiva, I have to be outvoted." So he needed a place in his own school in Maimonides as well as in Yeshiva University in New York. He felt that he has a right to maintain all of his opinions. There was a big stickler on minhagim, family minhagim and on minhagim. We just had the summer parshios. So one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham, points out, he quotes from one of the Kabbalah Svarim, that in the beginning of Parshas Maaseh, the Chumash lists off all of the 42 cities where the Jewish people traveled when they were in the Midbar. So he quotes a Kabbalah Sefer that the Membeis Masos HaKeneged, the Shem Membeis, there's a name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that has 42 letters. And you shouldn't be mafzik, you shouldn't have any hafsokas in the middle of Membeis Masos. So Sheni is printed in the middle of the Membeis Masos. So usually Shabbos afternoon on Parshas Matos, when you have Matos Masi separate, Shabbos afternoon you just lay 20 of the Masos and you call it quits. And Monday or Thursday morning also like that. No, Masi was in the middle of the summer. So he was in Anset on vacation where there was Mamash and Minyam at Tzumtzum. There were only 10 Balabatim there. A lot of times they only had 9 Balabatim, so I had to call in the baker, The Jewish baker who is Mechal Shabbos Befrahesia, whose shop is open on Shabbos, they had to call him in to be Mashlim in the Minyan, in Anset. So I remember, and the Balabatim were Afshpilkas, they had to run to, had to travel to Boston to go to work. He had to maintain his Minhagim. So they had a lane, the Kohen gets the Aliyah, whoop, the 42 Psukim, and then the lady had a lane, and then the Shlishi had a lane. So they lay the half a Sedra. Then I remember for Parshas Dvarim, I remember once on Parshas Masa in the afternoon, Shabbos afternoon, Parshas Masa, so you lay in Dvarim. So they called up the Kohen, the Levi, then they gave me Shlishi in the Shul. So the Balkari lanes until Sheni, on Shabbos afternoon, you lay till Sheni. So I was about to say the Brachi after the Kriyas HaTorah. So Rav Soloveitchik says, no. He says the Balkari should rain till Shlishi. He didn't prepare till Shlishi. So he said, we have to get another Balkari. You have to lay till Shlishi. Lane till Shlishi, I say the Brachi, and I asked him, what is this all about? Where he came from in Europe, that was the minig, that you lay till Shlishi. Because in Parshas Dvarim, in between Sheni and Shlishi, the Chumash speaks about Hamoras Hadayonim. But Moshe Rabbeinu appointed all of the Rabbonim to pass in all the cases, sorry Alof, sorry Meris, sorry Chamishim, sorry Asarais. And the Gemara tells us, commenting on the Pasuk, Tzion b'mishpat tipode, that the Gulu Hasidah will come when we will do Hamodas Dayonim, we'll have Erlecha Dayonim who will judge honest to goodness Dina Torah. So since Tzion b'mishpat tipode and Parashas Dvarim is always in the 9 days, so that's why the meaning where he came from was that they would lay until Shlishi. He would insist on maintaining all of his menhagim, or on Parshas Hazinu. On Parshas Hazinu, it says in the Gemara that on Shabbos, when you're laying Parshas Hazinu, you can't make Hoysofis in the middle. You have to lay Hazivloch. You have to start for the Koyin with the letter Hey Hazinu, and then the Levi has to start from Zayin Zecharim Hoysolim and Yud and Vav Hazivloch specific spots. What about on Sheni Vechamishi? What about on Monday, Thursday morning? Or what about the week before? Vayelech in the afternoon. So the Rama says in Shulchan Aruch that we're not makbid on Haziv Loch unless you're laning the whole Shiras Hazinu. So Rav Soloveitchik said where he came from, the minig was that they were makbid. Samach Reinim, the Shurik Nes HaGdola quotes, they were makbid. So he would make them lane a half a Sedra. People would go crazy. He insisted that's the minig. He made them lane a half of the Sedra. He was a big stickler on Minhagim. People didn't understand him. People often heard that he was Mezalzal Minhagim, he was Mevatel Minhagim. So they thought he's not careful about Minhagim. It's not true. He was a terrible stickler on Minhagim. By now you may have come to the realization, when he would get an aliyah, so he would always turn to the left when he would say the bracha. Everybody thought, what is he crazy? What is he turning to the left? Because that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. There's a whole discussion on the last daf in Gemara Megillah when a person gets an aliyah and he says the Birchas HaTorah, so the tzibur may think by mistake that he's laning the brachas as if the brachas are printed in the Sefer Torah. So Gemara has one opinion, you should close the Sefer Torah. And then the other opinion is that it's not necessary to close the Sefer Torah. So he said he remembers the Gedolim in Europe followed the Shita, not that it's not necessary to close the Sefer Torah, but if you close it, it's even better. No, Bedafke, you're not allowed to close the Sefer Torah. So he gave a whole explanation why you're not allowed to close the Sefer Torah. So if you're not allowed to close the Sefer Torah, so you have this concern, people may think Brachas Ksuvas Basefer, they'll think the Brachas are written. So the Ramah says the meaning is that you turn to the left. So you're clearly not looking in the Sefer Torah, so you say the brachas by heart. Obviously saying by heart. So the Mishnah Berurah says that we no longer follow that minig. He didn't have any Mishnah Berurah. As a minig in Shulchan Aruch, so he used to follow everything that it said in Shulchan Aruch. I remember I was reading a Sefer that my uncle wrote. My uncle has smichas in the yeshiva, so he wrote a book of drushes of his own, drushes that he heard from Rav Soloveitchik, Hanhoges, Minhogim, Dinim, Sokim. So he writes, on one occasion, he was driving Rabbi Soloveitchik from New York to Boston by car, and it was the last night to recite Kiddush Levana. So Rabbi Soloveitchik asked him to stop the car on the side of the highway. They're going to get out. They're going to say Kiddush Levana. So he says, my uncle had already said Kiddush Levana. So he says to my uncle, Shalom Aleichem. He answers back, Aleichem Shalom. He says, the second time, Shalom Aleichem. A third time, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. So I read this. I was wondering, where did he get this one from? He say three times, all right, there's no one else there. So he don't say Shalom Aleichem. So I wonder, where did he get it from? So I figured I'm going to look in the Kaf HaChaim. Mestama, the Kaf HaChaim is one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch. Mestama, he's going to tell you already, someone has such a minig that you say three times to say. But before I took out the Kaf HaChaim, but before you find a place on the bottom of the page, you have to find what it says on the top page. So I start looking on top. Lo and behold, that's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. It says you say three times to the same person. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So that's what he did. So I remember I was visiting Eretz Yisrael after I read that. I was so surprised. I remember I was visiting Eretz Yisrael. So it was right before Rav Goldberg passed away. I think 2 months before he passed away, in January, he passed away, he said, Tu B'Shvat or something, Odor, Zayin Odor or something. So I visited by him. He lived in Harnof at that time, I think. So he asked me, tell me over something from Rav Soloveitchik. So I started telling him this, that Rav Soloveitchik said to the same person. He says, yeah, the Biskarov always did the same thing. On Matzoi Shabbos, when they would say Dav Mar, they would say Kiddush Levana, so there would be a chotzer full of people, 60 people. He would say to one person, pick one person, say three times Shalom Aleichem to the same person. Because that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. As Talmidim, we used to wonder, why is this man different from all other people? All the Rabbanim do it one way. He does everything different. And then when we got older, we started to learn Shulchan Aruch. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. We will live in a shtaymin. Nobody follows what it says in Shulchan Aruch. This strange person used to do all these strange things. He used to do what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Things that in Shulchan Aruch, it says the later commentary said, we don't do that anymore. So he said, what do you mean we don't do that anymore? That's the minhag, so that's what you have to do. He was a big stickler on Minhagim. Every rabbi knows that on Erev Pesach, the Rabbanim have to sell a chametz Erev Pesach in the morning. So every rabbi, my father was in the rabbinate, still alive, but he's retired by now. So every Erev Pesach, one or two balabatim at least, would always call up the rabbi. They'd ask me, Rabbi, they forgot to come to the rabbi to sign that they want the rabbi to sell a chametz for them, and they ask him over the telephone that he sell a chametz. So the minig is that the rabbi makes a Kabbalah Kinyan with the balabatim. He gives him a handkerchief or something, a gartel, whatever. Some rabbanim give the bottom of their jacket, okay? Because the jacket is made from wool. The handkerchiefs are made from cotton, and some of the Gedolim Hill has to be gimelah. Gimelah Tzva is only good if it's wool. So some of the rabbanim, now the jackets are also not made from wool. But years ago, when the jackets used to be made from wool, so some of the rabbanim used to insist on giving Daka the jacket that it should be gimelah Tzva. But if the balabas calls on the telephone, so it's not shaykh to make a kabbalah kinyan, so fartik, so it's only a minig, so you can't do anything about it. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said no. He explained two kunsten, two trick ways how to be yotzei the minig of making a kabbalah kinyan, even though it's on the telephone. He said one way is ask the balabas, he's calling from his office on Erev Pesach in the morning, ask him if there's another yid there, that the other yid should give the suder on behalf of the rabbi, midin evit knaini. That's one way. Or he said another way to fulfill the minig is, the Rambam writes about this minig that you make a Kabbalah kinyan when you appoint the rabbi as the shliach to sell a chometz for you. You're not selling the chometz to the rabbi. You're appointing the rabbi as a shliach that he should sell a chometz. So the Rambam says, it doesn't really make any sense that you should require a kinyan. You appoint the rabbi as a shliach, so he becomes a shliach by the oral declaration. So why do we have such a custom to make a kinyan? So the Rambam says he thinks that it's in order to demonstrate that it's b'leiv gomer, b'leiv shalem, that the person really means it. So just to demonstrate that it's b'leiv shalem, so he makes such a kinyan suda. So the Rambam says, l'fichach, if the person appoints me as a shliach to either get to his wife or to sell his chametz, whatever. The Rambam doesn't talk about selling chametz. He says, time to appoint a shliach. If he says, b'leiv gomor amarti v'asisi dovazeh, then there's no need to make the kinyan suda. So he said, tell the balabas that he should tell you over the telephone, I'm doing this with my whole heart, b'leiv gomor amarti, shayin so you go to the minute. You look, they quote the Chazon Ish, never held from this minute. I'm making Kabbalah's Kinyan Suda Fafa Kaifan Chomets. And the stipler of the brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish also. They never sold Chomets. They used to ask the Rav in Bnei Brak sell the Chomets for them, and they never used to do the Kabbalah's Kinyan Suda. Why? They held it to Minik Shtus. Since the Rambam says it doesn't make any sense, he says there's no need for a Kinyan Suda. There's no need for a Kinyan Suda, and it doesn't make any sense. So he said, it doesn't make sense, it's a Minik Shtus. Rav Soloveitchik said, no, the Rambam first says that it doesn't make any sense, but then he knocks good sense into it. He says, it makes good sense. Once the Rambam explains that it's a good minig, so you have to observe the minig. So in principle, all the Rabbanim agree to the same klal. You have to observe minhagim, unless it's a minig shtus. So the Talmid HaChachamim in every generation have to determine which minig is a minig shtus, which minig is not a minig shtus. So the Chazon Ish held that this minig are making a Kabbalah's Kinyan Suder, when you appoint the rabbi as a shliach, as a minig shtus, because the Rambam starts off by saying in Hilchas Mechira that no kinyan is needed, vein minig bazet tam. It's on a tam and you don't accomplish anything. So he felt it's a minig shtus, so you're not allowed to follow it. Rav Soloveitchik said, no, that's how the Rambam starts off. But then he does explain why it makes sense to demonstrate that it's b'leiv shalem. So when you get to the end of the Rambam, it's not a minig shtus. So Rav Soloveitchik also said, the Rabbanim have to investigate each and every minig to see whether this is a minig shtus, that's a minig that does make sense. So a lot of minhagim that other people used to observe, he said a minig shtus. And other minhagim that the other people did not observe, like turning to the left, Now there are a lot of people turn to the left and say, you know, that's a Siddur Muvik. He must have seen it by Rabbi Soloveitchik. I don't do that. But a lot of the other students of Rabbi Soloveitchik, when they get an Ali, they turn to the left because that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, and that's the meaning that they follow. So he was a big stickler by Minhagim, but not if it's a Minhag Shtus. So what's the definition of a Minhag Shtus? That's important. So he used to say, one of his recurrent themes in his drushes in the early years was that ceremonies, he has it in his published essays also, ceremonies, das ist von der Katholiken. Ceremonies, that's in the Catholic religion. Judaism doesn't have any ceremonies. We have mitzvahs deraisa, we have mitzvahs derabbanan, we don't have ceremonies. What do you mean we don't have ceremonies? We have so many minhagim. So he said, the minhagim are not ceremonies. Ceremony that's meaningless, it just represents something, that's from another avodah zarah religion. Every minhag has a kiyum. So he spent more time explaining minhagim and shulchan aruch than all of the other rabbanim put together. Moshe Feinstein sometimes spoke about a minhag. Rabbi Yanka Kamenetsky. All the rabbanim, all the prominent rabbanim. He spent more time than all of them put together. He explained every minhag and shulchan aruch. Not what's the reason for the minhag. Every minhag has a reason. Just because it has a reason doesn't mean that it's not a minhag shtus. He felt that a minhag, in order that it shouldn't be a minhag shtus, has to have a kiyum. You have to have accomplished something by this. Either you take, for example, the meaning is that we recite Zmiris on Shabbos, so we sing Zmiris on Shabbos. What is Zmiris all about? So he said, the Rambam writes that the mitzvah to recite Kiddush on Shabbos requires not just to say thank you to the Rabbanu Shalom for giving us Shabbos, not enough to say Shabbos is a holy day. You have to say Shabbos is different from the other days of the week. You have to mention the uniqueness and the difference of Shabbos from the rest of the week. If you just say, one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch writes, if you greet someone and say, good Shabbos, Rabbi Kivege writes that, Yoytze the mitzvah of Kiddush min haTorah. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes it and he says, how can it be? But the Rambam writes, you have to say about the sanctity of Shabbos and the uniqueness of Shabbos. Just by greeting someone and saying, good Shabbos, he didn't say about Shabbos being different from the rest of the week. So that's the Rambam writes like that. In the Sefer HaMitzvahs, that's the definition of the mitzvah of Shabbos. So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, this appears in Rishonim, the Tshuvas HaRosh writes like this, the main theme of the Zmiris is, Yom Zeh Mechuban Mikol HaYomim, that today is a day that's different from all the other days. Today is Kodesh, and the Hashpah of Shabbos lasts for the rest of the week. So all of the Zmiris, you're not obligated in our Torah to recite the Zmiris. But once you recite the Zmiris, it's as if you're enhancing your fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kiddush. You're speaking about the uniqueness and the sanctity of Shabbos over and over and over again. So you're adding on to the Kiyum HaMitzvah Deraisa of reciting of Kiddush. This was an important theme in his thought. There's a famous comment from the Vilna Gaon. The Gemara says that the obligation to eat matzah only applies the first night of Pesach to the Seder. They live in Chutzlar, it's the first two nights of Pesach. The rest of Pesach, if you want to eat potatoes or you want to eat the No bread at all, no matzah. There's no obligation to eat matzah. So the expression that the Gemara uses is Laila Harishim Chayva. The first night of Pesach, it's an obligation to have matzah. And the rest of Pesach, it's a reshus. So what does the word reshus mean? Optional. If you don't want to have, you don't have to. So the Vilna Gaon is famous for this. They quote the Vilna Gaon says, no, it's a mitzvah reshus. You're not obligated to eat matzah, but if you do eat matzah, then you have a kiyum mitzvah. You have fulfilled the mitzvah. Because Sof Kol Sof, it says in the Pasuk, you should eat matzah all 7 days of Pesach. So true, we learn out from the other Pasuk, but Erev Tochel Matzahs, that the obligation to eat matzah is only the first night, but if you eat matzah the rest of Pesach, there will be a Kiyum HaMitzvah. So this is really a big Chiddush, that there's such a concept as a mitzvah Sarashus. Some Rabbanim in our generation say that it doesn't exist, that the Vilna Gaon is wrong. Big Talmid HaCham, they say the Vilna Gaon is wrong. There is no such thing. The terminology is self-contradictory. Mitzvahs, harishus, mitzvah does mean a good deed. Mitzvah means obligatory. Mitzvah mitzuvah. You're obligated to do something that's optional. The sentence doesn't make sense. But that's what the Vilna Gaon said. That eating matzah the rest of Pesach is a mitzvah harishus. So you look in the Tziv, in his commentary on Chumash, in the end of Chumash Vayikra, poses a problem. Rashi writes in his commentary on Chumash and his commentary on the Gemara a few places that when you mafrish maisa behema, there's a mitzvah in the end of Chumash Veikra, the end of Chukaisai, that if the farmer had many animals born in his herd in the course of the year, Rosh Hashanah lemaisa behema is one tanis is echad be'el, one tanis is echad betishrei. So in the course of the year, if you had a lot of behemas born, so you should take all the animals together and be mafrish maisa behema, and each tenth animal he should bring as a carbon in the Beis Hamikdash. So who gets that animal? Who eats it? So it never says in the Chumash. Rashi says it doesn't say. So obviously the farmer eats it. It doesn't have to give it away to the Kohanim or to Levim. If it doesn't say you have to give it away, you don't have to. So that's what Rashi always writes. Some of the Gaonim write that giving Maisa Behemoth to the Kohen is one of the 24 Matnas Kohuna. The Gemara says many places that there are 24 gifts that we're obligated to give to the Kohen. So you give Pidyon HaBen money is one. You give Truma is one. You give Maisa Menah Maisa is one. You give Challah. So which are the other 20? So there are many more than 24. That's the problem. There are more than 24. So Rashi and the Gaonim have a different way of counting what are the 24 Matnas Kohuna. They have to combine a few together. So some of the Gaonim say they're giving Maisa Behema, that the carbon is given to the Kohen. So Rashi is disagreeing with all the Gaonim. He says there is no such thing. And the Chumash it never says, and the Mishnah it never says, so you don't give. So the Netziv poses a problem, but in Divrei Hayomim, it says, when they built the second Beis HaMikdash, in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, they came back from Eretz Yisrael, they brought the Maisa Behema and they gave it to the Kohanim. Shteid Beferi said they gave it to the Kohen. So what do you mean Rashi says you don't give it? So the Netziv says, just like the Vilna Gaon said, that on Pesach, eating matzah, the rest of the 6 days of Pesach is a reshus. Means even though you're not obligated to do it, but if you do it, there's a kiyama mitzvah. So he's mechadish here also. Even Rashi has to agree that you're not obligated to give Maisa Behemoth to the Kohanim, but if you do give it, the Pasuk in Dibra Yamim indicates that there is a kiyama mitzvah. So where did they figure it out from Chumash? So he works it out. So then the Netziv goes on more. He has more cases where he's mechadish, that even though in HaTorah one is not obligated to do a certain mitzvah, but if you're going to do it, it is a kiyama mitzvah in HaTorah. The Ravid has a famous comment. The Ravid learned b'charusa with the Balamor, so they have a hasogas on each other's svarim. So the Ravid writes in the end of Chulin, this Ravid is quoted in the Sefer Kafta B'Ferach, one of the Rishonim quotes it, that although the biblical obligation to be mafresh trumas and maisis only applies on dog and tirish v'yitzar, on grain and on wine and on olive oil. It doesn't apply on oranges and on potatoes and on carrots. One is not obligated biblically to be mafresh, trumas, and maisers. But if one is mafresh to truma, it's chal min ha-Torah. Then the rabbi goes ahead to develop a whole din. So what's the din of this truma that was optional? If you didn't want it, you didn't have to be mafresh it. If a zar will eat it, will it be misa b'dei shamayim? If a zar eats it, did you have to be maisis chaymish? And he has a whole pilpul about this. So Rishonim already have such a concept. Didn't begin with the Vilna Gaon. There is a concept of a mitzvah or reshus, that you're not obligated to do something, but if you'll do it, there will be a kiyama mitzvah. But Lineta, tomorrow morning when I give the shir about establishing new Yamim Tovim, we'll be talking about that a little bit. When there's a kiyama mitzvah min HaTorah, even though there's no obligation. So Rav Soloveitchik used to spend a lot of time. When he gave shiurim on Shulchan Aruch, he used to explain every psak in the Shulchan Aruch has to make sense. Every shach. Every Magen Avraham has to make sense. So he would explain every minig in the Shulchan Aruch, he would show from the Vilna Gaon, the Bir HaGaon Shulchan Aruch, every minig, the minig is like this, minig is like that. He would explain every minig either means that you're choshish for an opinion that wasn't accepted. Rashi and Tosfos have a machloikis, and we paskan like Tosfos, so we're choshish for Rashi, shun kvod shel Rashi, or even though you're not mukhiyif to do this, but it's a kiyum of this sheet, of that sheet, of the other opinion, this. Every minig has to have a kiyum. If you have a minig that has no kiyum whatsoever, then that's called a minig shtus. A minig that has no kiyum. So everybody agrees to that. There's a category of minig shtus. That's what the Rabbein Tam is quoted. There's a famous tshuva written by the Rabbein Tam where he writes that the word minhog, mem, nun, hey, gimel, is the same osius as gehenim. Gimel, hey, nun, mem. So he says, sometimes you think you're following a minig, you're doing things that you belong in gehenim. That's a minig shtus. He has a tshuva about a get. In the end of Gittin, the Martin in the end of Gittin has a tshuva. So Rabbein Tam starts off, a minig is osius gehenim. So if it's a minig shtus, then it's osius gehenim. And if it's not a minig shtus, so then it should be observed. Minig Yisrael Torah. So who determines whether it's a minig shtus? The Rabbanim in every generation have to paskin whether any given minig is a minig shtus or not. So when Rav Soloveitchik's policy was, his understanding was, whenever there's a kiyum, whenever you do some kind of a minig, every minig has a good reason. But that's still just a ceremony. That doesn't make it into a valid minig. A minig, after you do it, you have to have fulfilled something. You're mekayim some kind of a mitzvah. If it has no kiyama mitzvah, then he said that's a minig shtus, and he says he thinks it may be a violation of Bal Tosif. You're not permitted. So that's why he spent an awful lot of time to explain all of the minhagim. He used to quote from Rishonim why the minig is that you wear a kittel all day long on Yom Kippur, why you wear a talis even by Ma'ariv all day long. He quoted from the Rishonim. Beautiful. Everything was sources in Gemara, sources in Chumash. Every minig has to make sense, has to not only has to have a reason, has to have a kiyum on mitzvah, doesn't have a kiyum, so he felt that that's a minig shtus. So it's interesting that on the same minig, Rav Soloveitchik was insistent that if the balabas calls up the rabbi in Erev Pesach in the morning, so you can't make a kinyan stud over the telephone, he insisted that you still have to observe the minig. There are two possible ways to observe the minig. So the Chazon Ish held that whole minig he didn't hold from. Chazon Ish held that whole minig of Kabbalah's kinyan suda, that's a minig shtus medaf bechlal nish, because the Rambam said it doesn't make any sense. Rav Soloveitchik said, no, that's how the Rambam starts off. But then two lines later, the Rambam knocks sense into it, and he explains why it does make sense. I remember they told me that one of the boys asked Rav Soloveitchik, he was getting married, and Shulchan Aruch, there's a minhag, to get married tachas kippas harakiyah, in order to invoke the blessing of kol yer zaracho. It says in the Chumash, Vayote osa hachutza, that Avraham Avinu was in his ohel, in his tent, and the Rabban Shalom said, go out of your tent and look up at the stars, count the stars, can you count how many stars there are? So too your descendants will be so many that you won't be able to count them. Kol yer zaracho. So the Rambam writes a meaning that if a couple is getting married at the age of 65, so we're not going to bless her that she should have a lot of children. But if a young couple is getting married, we want them to be blessed with a lot of children. So the meaning is to get married outside. So not every wedding hall in New York City affords you the opportunity of getting married outside. Sometimes you just can't do it. So in Europe, they write, the Achronim writes from Europe, that sometimes there'll be a Chil Hashem. They would insist on getting married outside when the weather was bad. I remember we attended a wedding in Williamsburg, a real chassidish wedding. So the kala was wearing a white gown, and the chuppah was red chuppah, and it was snowing or raining. So the dye from the red chuppah was dripping down on the kala's gown, and the non-Jews were hanging out of the windows. They were laughing their heads off. These idiots, these crazy Jews, they get married outside when it's raining, and the dye is dripping on the kala. So that's what the Achronim write in Europe. Sometimes they insist on this meaning, Zachil Hashem. But when the weather is nice, so that's considered a beautiful minig. So one of the boys asked Rav Soloveitchik about this minig, about getting married outside. So he said he wasn't there when his uncle Rav Velvela got married. His father was there at the wedding. He was out of town. He seems to remember his father said that he got married inside the house. He didn't get married outside. And he said jokingly, then already he spoke in English instead of the earlier years he spoke Yiddish. Then he spoke in English, so he said, God listens to the blessings inside also. You shouldn't think that you have to be so close to God that you shouldn't have the roof intervening. It's okay, God will listen to the blessing inside. So we didn't understand. When the boy was telling us that, we didn't understand. What is he making fun? It's a minig from Shulchan Aruch. Some say it's a Talmud Yerushalmi. The minig, some claim it goes back to the Talmud Yerushalmi. What is he making fun? So I didn't understand. What's it, the Unger Chepet on the minig? Till I saw Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this. So he developed the exact same theme that Rav Soloveitchik said. Rav Moshe Feinstein, by the way, was the first cousin of Rav Soloveitchik's mother. Her maiden name was Feinstein. Her father was Rabelia Feinstein. He was a rabbi in Prussian. He was a businessman also. He was a wealthy man. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a whole shuv about this also. So he says, this sounds like a ceremony. What do you mean, getting married outside in order to invoke the blessings? You're not, he says, every minig that we insist on observing, you're in fulfillment of some kind of a mitzvah or another. You're mekayim some kind of a shita. There's an opinion like that, or it's an enhancement, like the zmirat are an enhancement. The kiddush, he gives a few mishalim. But he says, over here, this is just a ceremony. So he says, nonetheless, it's like you have white tablecloths for a wedding. You can just as well have yellow tablecloth. You can have a blue. The gown, the kala wears a white gown. The kala can wear a brown gown also. But a symbol of purity. So this is a Simen Yofa. So you get married outside of Simen Yofa, but he has difficulty explaining many. So then after we saw Rav Moshe Feinstein Shuvah, that we understood, that's why Rav Soloveitchik was knocking it down a little bit. It is an old minig, but it's not his kind of a minig. It's not the kind of a minig that, it's a minig, the Simen Yofa. Like the Gemara says, when they would anoint a king, so they would anoint a king by a flowing river, that just like the river flows, that his kingdom should flow on. But that's really a ceremony. That's really a certain sense of ceremony. But that's a ceremony, l'simen yofa, it should look nice. So this also, that the kala gets married, the young girl getting married, we want it to be blessed, want to invoke the blessing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Avraham Avinu, so that's why they get married under the sky. But it's not really the same as the other minhagim. We were speaking over the siyum tonight, we were speaking about Rav Soloveitchik. First he belonged to the Aguda, he was a very prominent figure in the Aguda. He was the founder of the branch of the Aguda in Boston. And then later on, he switched over to the Mizrahi. And then in earlier years, he belonged to the Agudas Rabbanim, which was the organization of the European Rabbanim. And then later on, he switched over to the Status Rabbanim. So when he belonged to the Aguda, he was not the typical Agudist. When he belonged to Mizrahi, he was not the typical Mizrahi. When he belonged to the Status Rabbanim, he was not the typical RCA Rabbanim. When he belonged to Agudas Rabbanim, wasn't typical. He was never typical. Whatever it said in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch, that was his opinion. You couldn't guess in advance. Oh, you can predict in advance what position he's going to say. You couldn't predict in advance what he's going to say unless you knew the Gemara the way he understood the Gemara. He had his own interpretation in every Gemara and every Sif in Shulchan Aruch. He had his own family traditions from his father, from his grandfather. All the strange things that they used to see him doing, he always used to quote. I learned by Rav Soloveitchik for 10 years. In the course of the 10 years, I heard he explained all the strange things. Say this when he heard from his father, this he saw by his grandfather, this is based on a Rambam, this is based on a Rashba. The people that didn't know him thought that he was just a mere genius, and a wild genius, he does whatever he pleases. He changes the Nusach and the Shemana Esrei here, and he says, Yalav Yavai, and he switches Sher Malish, and he does this and does that. No, he was saying over all these things, he had traditions. Had a lot of traditions from the Vilna Goyen, a lot of traditions from Valozhin, his family was in Valozhin, a lot from other Gedolim. He didn't have that many of his own original things. All of his shinuyim minhagim, all of the things that he did differently from other people, were all the traditions that he had sources for. The people that didn't understand thought that he was making up things. I remember I met a balabas in the summertime where I go on vacation. So that I used to learn with I learned whoever was interested in learning. So it was an older balabas. He must have been he passed away already a long time ago. Must have been 35 years older than me. So we were learning together. So one day he used to go to the Shurma Maria every Tuesday night. He lived in the middle of Manhattan. So he misunderstood. He thought that Rav Soloveitchik used to develop philosophical ideas and he used to paskin dinim based on his philosophy. So he tells me a din that he heard from Rav Soloveitchik that was based on philosophy. I told him, Mr. Mandra, you're making a mistake. He's quoting a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The people who listen, a lot of times people listen to the shir, they didn't realize what is he giving as a quotation. And what is his interpretation? What is he adding on? A lot of times they thought that the quotations that he was giving were his original ideas. So they said, how does he have the right to say that? There was one in Hapardes. Hapardes is another Torah journal in America. So Hapardes always used to praise Rabbi Soloveitchik. So someone wrote a whole, he wanted to write an attack against Rabbi Soloveitchik, but he knew that it wouldn't be well taken in Hapardes. So he wrote an attack against the one who wrote over the drasha in the name of Rav Soloveitchik. He meant really to attack Rav Soloveitchik. So Rav Soloveitchik, this was a common drasha by him. He would speak about kavod abriyas, how you have to give kavod to every person. And by the Jewish people, we insist you have to give kavod to every human being, even if he's a shikar, a bum in the street, who's nobody, never accomplished anything in his life. Not only special people, scientists, or rabbonim, or engineers, or professors, or so on. And he said this was his interpretation of the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Atem kriyim adam, einu masolim kriyim adam." And Tosfos says the word ha'adam applies to non-Jews. The word adam only applies to Jews. What's the difference, adam and ha'adam? So he said, by the non-Jews only ha'adam, someone special. That's who deserves kavod. By the in our religion, we feel that every human being deserves kavod abris. So he would give the mashal. The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur was preparing himself for 7 days. He was waiting to do the Avodah on Yom Kippur. He's the only one who can do it with a whole exciting description of the way it goes. Then in the middle of Yom Kippur, he comes upon a Meis Mitzvah. So he has to be metapel in the Meis Mitzvah. And who is the Meis Mitzvah? Meis Mitzvah means a Jewish person who died and he has no relatives to take care of. How can it be a Jewish person? No one. A shikar, a bum on the street. He died. So the Kohen Gadol has to be metapel in the Meis Mitzvah on Yom Kippur. And he loses his chance to do the Avodah. And the second in charge, the next one, is appointed Kohen Gadol. He takes over and he does Avodah. So the whole story doesn't make any sense. They don't leave the Kohen Gadol alone on Yom Kippur. Where is he going that he bumps into a Meis Mitzvah? You don't bury a Meis on Yom Kippur anyway. Even Aydei Nochrim. On the first day Yontif, you bury Aydei Nochrim. The second day Yontif, you bury Aydei Yisrael. Shabbos on Yom Kippur, you don't bury any Meis Mitzvah. So what do you mean a Meis Mitzvah on Yom Kippur? The whole story is nonsense. It doesn't make any sense. So someone wrote up the drosh and it was printed in Hapardes. So someone else wrote a letter to the editor. The one he really meant to say, Rav Soloveitchik doesn't know what he's talking about, but he wrote, the one who wrote up the drosh must have made a mistake. He certainly made a mistake. It's impossible. The Kohen Gadol can't bump into a Meis Mitzvah. What kind of a ridiculous mashal is this? So a month later, someone else sent in a letter to the editor. The questions you're asking are murderous questions, but Rav Soloveitchik is just quoting a Tosfos in Nozir. The Achronim is the Kashas on Tosfos. He's just quoting a Tosfos. Whatever Pshat and Tosfos and Nazir is, that's Pshat in the story that he was giving. A lot of times he would just be quoting a passage from the Gemara, but the listeners didn't realize this is a quotation, and then he's giving an interpretation. He didn't make up the dinim, he didn't make up the information. That's why very often he was misunderstood, that people didn't understand what he's quoting. A lot of times when he gave shiurim on Shulchan Aruch, he explained all the different opinions. So on Shulchan Aruch they quote one opinion, they quote another opinion, then the accepted opinion is this. So he wanted to make sense out of this opinion, he wanted to make sense out of that opinion. A lot of times he wouldn't say which one we pass in Allah. So one fellow was bald and he wore a toupee. He used to wear the tefillin on top of his toupee. He said, Rabbi Soloveitchik said it's okay. The Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to wear the tefillin on top of your toupee. It's a chatzitza. Tefillin have to be on top of the head. So you can't have a toupee, mopsik in between the tefillin. He said, he heard it from Rabbi Soloveitchik. So I said to him, Chochma, I heard it from Rabbi Soloveitchik also. He was explaining the opinion that's not accepted. When he gave Shiva on Shulchan Aruch, he explained all the opinions. And then at the end, he said, and we paskin this way. So this fellow wasn't paying attention. He heard when he said the first thing. Rabbi Soloveitchik's style in giving a shiur was also, he had by tradition, had to analyze Gemara. We were discussing earlier today, one of the people who learned by Rabbi Soloveitchik, who's a prominent figure today in Eretz Yisrael, made the following statement. He says, Rabbi Soloveitchik was so great, if all of the Talmud Bavli would have been lost except for one page, Rabbi Soloveitchik would be able to take that one page and reconstruct the rest of the Talmud based on that one page. It's absolutely not correct. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't, that doesn't make any sense. Rabbi Soloveitchik did not have that style of learning. So many Rabbanim have, they take a line in the Gemara and then they philosophize Chakiris on top of Chakiris on top of Chakiris, and they come out with 1,000 new dinim. That was not his style at all. Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he had a problem in the Gemara, understanding the Gemara, he would try to explain it based on other Gemaras, not just based on Svara. Svara doesn't always work. Svara a lot of times can mislead you. He would show, you see another Gemara that develops a certain idea, so based on that idea, you see that's the Yisoid, so that explains this Gemara. A lot of times the two Gemaras would be in two different Mesichtas with two different expressions, two different terminologies. He would show when the dinim are the same, even though they're in different languages. And a lot of times it's the exact same terminology, the same expression appears in the Gemara and the two different dinim. The Baal HaMor has, one of the commentaries on this, the Baal HaMor has, and the end of Chulin, now they don't print it anymore, in the end of Chulin, now they print it in the Raivid Sefer, Shabbos HaTshuvos, what's it called? The Tmim Deim, Laharaibid. So they have this, Baal HaMor wrote what's called the Sefer HaTzofa. He writes a gimmick style. That just like the Yud Gimel Midrash HaTorah Nidrashes Behem, so too the Yud Gimel Midrash HaTalmud Nidrash Behem. HaTalmud Nidrashes Behem. So he gives you Klolim style of Loshon HaGemara. So he writes this is one of his Yud Gimel Midrash. A lot of times you have Gemaras where it's the exact same expression appears in two different Gemaras, and it does mean the same thing. And a lot of times you have totally different expressions and it's exactly the same idea. So that was, by Rabbi Soloveitchik, that was called Lamdas, to identify, to try to figure out, you have a jungle of 1,000 dinim in the Gemara. If you only have one dinim, there's nothing to analyze. What are you going to analyze? But if you have a lot of dinim, so you have to analyze which dinim are related and which dinim are not related. And whether they're related or not doesn't necessarily depend on whether they have the exact same expression appearing in the two Gemaras or not. A lot of times it's the same expression and it means two different things. A lot of times it's different expression and it means the same thing. So Rabbi Soloveitchik, if there would be only one page of the Gemara, he would not be able to reconstruct the rest. That doesn't make any sense. If you have a lot of Gemaras and everything contradicts each other, he was a master at figuring out what's the rule and what's the exception to the rule and how the rule works, how everything works. But he didn't make up anything. In the yeshiva, they used to call him the Rav. The reason why they called him the Rav is that historically it's very interesting. Officially, Dr. Belkin was the Rosh Yeshiva. Originally, when Dr. Revel, Rav Dov Revel was the Rosh Yeshiva in the yeshiva, and he was the president of the college. So when he passed away, so there were two spots that had to be filled. They had to decide who's going to take over to be Rosh Yeshiva, who's going to take over to be president. So there was first Agansa Machlekes, the Talmidim and the Balabatim and the Rabbanim from the Agudas Rabbanim, who should be Rosh Yeshiva. And they were considering Rabbi Yoshe ben Soloveitchik, and they voted against him because he was very cold and he used to go back to Boston, had no shaychus with the boys. And Dr. Rebel was close with the Talmidim. He lived in New York. He used to give them money to go out on dates. He used to discuss shidduchim with them. He's a real Rosh Hashiva. So the Talmidim and the Balabatim, they all decided he's more Rosh Hashiva. So they made Dr. Belkin the Rosh Hashiva. Then there was a Machlekes who should be the president. The people who voted in Dr. Belkin as the Rosh Hashiva said that would be a tragedy if you make him the president. You'll ruin him. He used to give shiurim. Libesov, that's what happened. They made him the president, and it did ruin him. He had to give up the shiur, had to give up learning. He dedicated his whole life to the yeshiva. It destroyed him in the end. So, officially, Rav Soloveitchik was not the Rosh Hashiva in YU. He was a Maggid Shir, same as everybody else, Maggid Shir. He didn't have the final say at all about running anything in the school. He was a salaried Rebbe in the yeshiva. So, when people wanted to call him with a title, so they couldn't call him Rosh Hashiva. Officially, he wasn't the Rosh Hashiva. Dr. Belkin was. So the Talmidim decided, just like in Europe, there were communities where they had a Rav and they had a Rosh Yeshiva. So this community of Yeshiva University, we have a Rosh Yeshiva, as Dr. Belkin, we have a Rav. So they're going to call Rav Soloveitchik the Rav. I is Nishkin Rav. So they said, well, they call Rav Velvela Soloveitchik the Rav, even though there was no Brisk anymore. Brisk was destroyed in the Second World War, so they still called him the Rav. So the boys decide they're going to call Rav Soloveitchik the Rav. Those who lived in New York will remember, they always used to refer to Rav Moshe Feinstein as the Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't have such outstanding students in his yeshiva. He was light years ahead of his students. He used to give a shiur on a very high level, and hardly anybody understood what he was talking about. He had one or two students who understood. He didn't really succeed in being a Rosh Yeshiva. He was really known as a poisek in New York. And on the other hand, Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't have the patience to sit and listen to a shaila with all the details. See, he didn't like to paskin any shaila. To paskin a shaila, you have to have a lot of patience and to sit and listen. Sometimes if there's a slight difference in the case, so you apply Sif Yud Gimel instead of Sif Aleph. Sometimes it didn't change based on a slight. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said jokingly on more than one occasion, he said, it doesn't make sense. They call me the Rav and they call him the Rosh Yeshiva. They should call me the Rosh Yeshiva, call him the Rav. And Moshe Feinstein always paskin a shaila. He had patience, he would listen. He knew Shulchan Aruch by heart with all the Prima Godims by heart. He always knew how to paskin. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't want to paskin any shaila. He said it would make more sense if they would call me the Rosh Yeshiva and they would call him the Rav. There was a very big difference, a very striking difference between Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe Feinstein. I don't mean anything negative about either, but they were very different in the following way. Rav Soloveitchik was very dramatic. Like I mentioned, this fella came up after the shiur and he said in English after Yiddish, did anybody ever tell you that you're a very good actor? Very dramatic, and his Yiddish was so good and poetic. And we thought when he was giving the Yahrzeit Drasha, those who remember, he used to have a stack of pages and he would turn the pages and turn the pages. We thought he was reading and he was talking Yiddish, flowing Yiddish, talk, talk, talk. After he passed away, we found out all of those notes were in Hebrew. And he was talking in Yiddish as if he's reading those pages. Everything was written in Hebrew. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was very dramatic and very poetic and everything. And he would explain everything so well, you got the impression as if he's making everything up on the spot. The Balabas thought he was making up the dinim, and the other one thought he was making up. They're just quoting a Gemara, a Tosfos, a Yerushalmi, or something. But Moshe Feinstein was very humble. He was truly humble person. He used to go like this. He spoke a litvus siyidus b'shmedris instead of saying b'shmedrish. He would say b'shmedris, a real litvish pronunciation. You know, he didn't even try to. To present a talk that everyone should understand. Hardly anybody understood what he said. Rav Soloveitchik, it's interesting, was not such an original thinker. I learned Rav Soloveitchik many years. He was not an original thinker. He said over traditional ideas, he said over a Gemara. But he made the Gemara so alive that you thought he just made it up. He was just saying over a Gemara. He was dramatizing the Gemara. He'd say over a Ksos HaChoshen. He would give such a dramatic presentation and he would coin new phrases. He was sharp on formulating terminologies. He would develop a concept and he would say, we're going to call that this name. We're going to call that that's a chepze, this is a gabra. He would say, this idea is represented with this word. And then as he would continue to give the shi, he would give in shorthand. He would say, is it a din a chepze, din a gabra? And everyone would follow what he said. But he wasn't saying over new things. He said over what it says. But because it was so dramatic, everybody thought that this the way he dressed, he didn't dress like a Moshe Feinstein, he dressed like a modern person. Everybody thought he was a modern man saying modern ideas. Moshe Feinstein was very original. Moshe Feinstein reversed the psak that was mekubal for centuries and many halachas. But he got away with everything because he was so humble and he walked like this. Doctor, he's saying over what it says in Shulchan Aruch, you know. You read his tshuvas. He says, I'm not going to pass like the Chasam Sofer because I hold Israel. I'm not going to pass like the Nodi Behuda. He took on everybody. Rav Moshe Feinstein took on everybody. Rav Soloveitchik never did such kind of things. He just said over traditional, in Halacha, he said over traditional psak, whatever it says in Shulchan Aruch. If Rav Moshe Feinstein came up with a new psak and said, we'll rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein on official insemination, Rav Soloveitchik said for years, he doesn't know if it's permissible, it could be the child of Zamams, I don't know. So Rav Moshe published the tshuva, so he said, okay, sure. Rav Moshe said it's okay, so it's mutter, it's not a mamz, we rely on Hagoyim HaTzadik Rav Moshe Feinstein. He didn't go in for original things at all. In fact, when they first published an English essay by Rabbi Soloveitchik on Jewish thought, so the publisher advertised modern Jewish philosophy, modern Jewish thought, something that everyone should buy a copy. So there was a book review that was written by a conservative rabbi. The Jewish Welfare Board used to have a newspaper, I think JWB Circle, years ago. My father used to get it in the mail every month. So they had the inner section, the inner four pages always would be book reviews. So they had a conservative rabbi wrote a book review of this book. He said, what do you mean modern Jewish philosophy? He says, the same old party line that his grandfather said. But he just dresses it up in fancy terminology as if you think that he's saying something. No, he's saying what the Beis HaLevi said. He's saying what his grandfather Rav Chaim said, the old Orthodox position. That's exactly what it was when he said Hashkofe. And when he said Halacha, he would be saying over what it says in the Gemara, but he would dress it up in such a way. He would use philosophical terminology. He would use terms from physics, modern physics, modern philosophy. So people would think, mi yodeh what he's saying. He was just saying over what it said in the Gemara, but he dressed it up well, both in Halacha and in Hashkofa. As opposed to Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Moshe said, tak, a very original, daring, startling chidushim. And he got away with everything because he was such a humble person. So everybody accepted it, Baruch Hashem. Rav Soloveitchik had certain influences from his college studies. He studied in university in Europe, in Berlin. So there are certain things that he carried over. For example, when we were studying Gemara, so he would ask us, we started Gemara Gittin, so he says the first day he wants us to give a definition of a shtar. A definition of a shtar? What do you mean a definition of a shtar? We didn't know what he was talking about. So he said in any discipline you have to first define the terms that you're talking about. So you're learning Gittin, I get this shtar, give me a definition of a shtar. So he didn't know what he was talking about. So he was explaining, Amachlekes HaRishonim, what's the definition of shtar? What's Edis B'Ksav Midasa Meschayev, Arai B'Ksav Midasa Meschayev. So 2 days in Rashi, and 2 days in Taisus in the beginning of Gittin. He would always work on definitions. He would, because that's in a university, in any discipline, you have to work on definitions. He would often, he would scream at the students if Taisus quotes a Gemara, and he would ask the student, did you look up the Gemara? So he says, no. So how do you know Taisus is telling the truth? He took their word for it. So he says, you went to university and you walked out with nothing. You don't take anybody's word for anything. You have to look up the Gemara, see if it really exists. Maybe the Gemara doesn't exist. Maybe in our editions it's a different gear, so maybe Rashi has a different shot. And a lot of times that is the case. Taisus often quotes a Gemara that we don't even have that gear, so we have the gear, so we have a different shot. The other Mefarshim have a different shot. He would scream about that. You went to university, you didn't even pick that up from all of university studies. You're not supposed to take anybody else's word for anything. He had from modern physics, and modern physics is still dealing with a problem. I think when Einstein passed away, he was also dealing with the problem about Tata de Sastri. There are certain aspects of modern physics that mamish, the klolim contradict each other, and the world of physics has learned to understand that you can live with contradiction. The shach that a thing is yes and no, it's the same thing, positive and negative at the same time. So many halachas he would explain based on that. Well, it was one of the big shurim that he gave. One of the Yahrzeit drushes that he gave that's published in the collection of Yahrzeit drushes about Bein HaShmoshes. There's a period of time after sunset, before Tzeis HaKochavim, before Oy Shabbos, that we say that it's a Safik Yom Safik Laila. So what does that mean, Safik Yom Safik Laila? It means the rabbis, we've been learning Torah for so many years, we still can't figure out when Yom ends and when Laila begins. What's so difficult? So let's get all the rabbis together and figure out whether it's Yom or Laila. So he quoted a Ritva in Erevin, Ritva and Yuma, Daf Yomi people just came across it around Mem Zayin or so. So the Ritva and Yuma explains that Nashmashis is a different kind of a suffix. It's Yom has the properties of Yom and the properties of Laila, and whatever has contradictory properties has to be treated as if it were a suffix. It's not that it's a suffix that the rabbis can't figure out whether Friday ends at sunset, 2 minutes later, 2 minutes later, 2 minutes later, or 20 minutes later. Not that they can't figure it out. No, they know that those 25 minutes have the properties of Yom and the properties of Laila, and we treat it as if it were a suffix. So he gave many additional mishalim. We have something with both karka and metaltalim, achatz yebe v'achatz mechorin, z'nebet ane ben chorin, many mishalim like that. With Allah, he recognizes such a din of a tarte de sasri, and suffix mamzer. Also, he gave a whole shira suffix mamzer. This is a concept that he showed exists in the world, in the world of physics. And he used to show this in Hashkafa as well, that we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in contradictory ways. We feel often that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very close to us. We often feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very far away from us. So at the same time, he's Mimali Kol Alman and Soivel Kol Alman. He's close to us and he's far away from us. Every time we recite a Baruch Hu, we say Baruch Atah Hashem. We start as if he's speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Loshen Noichach. And then we always switch to Loshen Nistar. Bari Pri Ha'adoma. Why don't we say Asher Barasa Pri Ha'adoma? So the Rajba says, no, that's the Nusach of all the brachas. You start Loshen Noichach, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is both close to you and far away from you at the same time. So he showed, in the physical world we have Tarte D'Sasri, in the spiritual world we have Tarte D'Sasri. It's not an impossibility. These are some of the ideas that come to mind with respect to Rav Soloveitchik. There's a lot to discuss, a lot of misunderstanding, as I mentioned in the long, a lot of misunderstanding about Rav Soloveitchik. The people who weren't around him long enough often misunderstood. They thought he's just Mevatel Minhagim. He wasn't Mevatel Minhagim. He studied all the Minhagim, he researched them. He was a stickler on his Minhagim, his family Minhagim, his community Minhagim, and he insisted on observing those. And a lot of the other Minhagim thought, some of the other Minhagim thought, Aminik Shtus, one has to study carefully. He didn't make up things just like that. He didn't make up things. Now, little by little, Svarma being published, and each Sefer captures a little bit about Rav Soloveitchik. But it's unfortunate that we don't, so many years passed by, it's already 13 years since he passed away, we don't have enough Svarim to really present him in the correct light. Nope. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Shechter, for giving us just a feeling and a sense of what it must have been like to live and learn from the great Rav Soloveitchik. Thank you very much, Rabbi Shechter. We look so forward to hearing the other shirim. Please join us for a cup of coffee and something to drink outside. Thank you very much and good evening. Thank you.